Hey, welcome to the Avenging Hour. I'm Jason.
I'm John.
And here we are again.
Where we're supposed to be, in people's ear holes every week.
Done with the West Coast Avengers, for now.
For now, but they're going to keep popping up again. We can't get rid of them. Yeah. Like a bad penny, they will return again and again and again.
And I never understood that saying.
I don't really either. What is a bad... I mean, aren't all pennies bad?
They're pretty useless.
Unless you're throwing them at people or dropping them off tall buildings.
I had a debate with my wife the other day. We stopped to get gas at this gas station, and I got out of the car, and there was a penny laying there by the car, but it was heads, tails up. And, you know, you're not supposed to pick up a penny unless it's heads up, because it's bad luck.
I've never heard that before.
So I asked her, if it's tails up, and I kicked it, and it bounced off of something, and then ended up heads up, am I allowed to pick it up then? Or have I just, like, screwed with the bad luck?
And her response was...
She's like, of course you can pick it up. It's heads up now.
And you were okay with that?
I just left it there because it was a penny.
Yeah, you've already put more time into thinking about it than the penny is worth.
Well, we were driving away at the time the debate came up. Oh, okay. I wasn't going to pick it up. I'd already decided that.
Because money is gross and disgusting.
Yeah, I don't want to touch it.
As someone who used to work in a grocery store, one of the worst things in the world was when we would empty the soda machine, the change from the soda machines on the porch every week, and I would have to count the soda machine change. Nothing is grosser than that. After that, you just want to cut your hands off.
Was it all, like, stuck together?
They'll never be clean again. Money is gross. It's disgusting. I'm trying to remember where
I worked one summer, and people would come in after they'd been out, like, swimming or something, and their money would be all wet. And they're, like, unfolding it and putting it in the palm of my hand. I'm like, oh.
Why are they swimming with their money?
I don't want this.
That can't be a good idea. it's just money is just a disgusting thing. That's why I...
Who needs it?
That's right. That's why I have a barter system. When I want something, I just take in a sheep or a chicken.
Here's a cord of wood.
Exactly.
I need a bushel of corn.
That's how I operate here.
We should go back to that.
Yeah, we should. I actually don't use a lot of money. I use mostly credit cards.
Yeah, I never have cash on me. Do we have a question to talk about, or are we just going to segue from meandering about money into, hey, Thor brought fire demons and there's snow and stuff?
No, we don't have a question of the month. We don't have any questions.
This week? We don't?
No, we don't. I have a quick question for you.
Okie dokie.
That I think fits in with the classy nature of our program.
Of course.
A while ago, we did a sex, marry, kill.
Oh, geez.
So here's your West Coast Avengers villains sex, marry, kill.
What, have we had three?
Blank, Graviton, and a magical snowstorm. Those are your villains.
Wow, that's tough. I'm just going to probably just outright kill Graviton because that guy's scary.
Yeah, agreed.
And I don't think you could ever trust him.
Agreed.
But the last two...
They're hard.
I think I'm gonna sex the blank.
Yeah, you kind of have to.
Because it would be kind of funny.
Well, that,
I'm not even sure you could do it.
That and the magical snowstorm is cold.
I'm totally marrying that snowstorm. It'd be Christmas year-round.
Well, and also, if you just need some time apart, I mean, you know, as a married couple, you can be like, well, maybe we should live in different places, in different houses.
Yeah, why don't you go north for the winter?
Yeah, yeah.
Get blow on out of here.
But yeah, I don't think I want to have sex with a magical snowstorm.
I don't want to even figure out how to do that.
No, no.
It would be probably difficult.
Difficult enough figuring it out with the blank.
That was horrible.
It's horrible. That should all be cut out. We should never talk of it again. Yeah.
Previously on The Avenging Hour, last episode we finished up the West Coast Avengers limited series, but if you can remember back a couple weeks, the team in our primary title had just encountered the Earth Eternals, watched them swirl into a giant brain, and then dealt with some weirdo named Maelstrom and his sidekick Death Urge, who conveniently murdered him when things went pear-shaped. And now, episode 115.
Before we talk about the first Avengers issue, we should talk a little bit about Thor number 350, which leads directly into the Avengers 249 that we're going to be talking about.
Is Thor a frog?
No, unfortunately. That's a great run. So we are in Walt Simonson's run on Thor. We haven't talked about Walt Simonson on this book, but we will. He's a writer and penciler that has done amazing work for Marvel and DC, and probably independent companies. I'm not sure, but most of his stuff I know is Marvel and DC.
He did some Elric stuff, but I don't remember who it was for.
Yeah, I don't know who. It might have been Marvel publishing through Epic.
In
any case, he will be writing. I don't think he ever draws the Avengers, but he will be writing this title in a few years' time. So anyway, Walt Simonson, though, does his run on Thor. And Thor is not a character that... I don't know how much Thor you've read. But
I've read Walt Simonson's run.
Yeah. He's not a character that I've ever been very fond of in his own title. But Walt Simonson managed to make Thor's book really interesting. And he had a long run on the book, about 3 or 4 years. And this is right smack dab in the middle of that run. Here's what we need to know. Asgard, the home of the Norse gods, is at war with Surtur, the giant fire demon, who we have seen in this title, way back at, like, in a fill-in issue, basically, where Doctor Strange got the Black Knight, Black Panther, Vision, and Hawkeye, maybe Hawkeye, to fight Surtur and Ymir.
Was that in an annual?
No.
Was that the one where things were, like, wacky, where there was, like, snow in Africa? And...
Yes.
Okay.
That's the one where, if I'm correct, the Black Panther threw a burning tree at Ymir?
Somebody threw a tree at somebody, yeah.
In any case, so we have seen Surtur. He is this giant fire demon. He is leading this group of demons called the Sons of Muspel against Asgard. Asgard is trying to shore up their defenses and gather up some allies for this assault, and Thor has been dispatched to Earth to contact the Avengers. That's all we need to know as we go into Avengers number 249 from November of 1984 by those old reliable Roger Stern and Al Milgrom, and it is called The Snows of Summer. Ah, the Caribbean. Wonderful weather, clear skies, beautiful beaches, Hercules under a palm tree singing songs while playing a guitar. Damn it. Thanks for ruining paradise, Hercules. Yes, Hercules is doing what he does best, singing songs and wooing women. Suddenly it starts to snow in the Caribbean in summer. Even a musclehead like Hercules knows that this be passing strange, and he decides to do something about it. So he jumps in the ocean and swims to a nearby aircraft carrier. Enough of him. Let's switch scenes. Avengers Mansion, where the Vision is chatting with Isaac, the world computer of Titan who connected the Vision to a worldwide computer network. The Vision is concerned about the death of Maelstrom, believing that Maelstrom has set forces into motion that could affect the entire world. However, his discussion with Isaac is cut short by a priority alert, and the Vision leaves to check in with the rest of the team. In fact, that entire team is checking in to find out what's going on, and Captain Marvel, on monitor duty, can easily describe the situation. It's snowing all over the world. Just then, Hercules calls in, who has commandeered a jet and is flying to New York. But no one cares what he has to say, as Thor pops into the mansion to lay down some exposition. He flashbacks that Surtur is attacking Asgard, and the Fire Demon is working with a dark elf named Malekith. Malekith has opened the Casket of Ancient Winters, and its name should clue everyone in to what it does. Of course, making the entire Earth primo sledding territory is only part of the reason the casket was destroyed. That's not right. The reason the casket was opened. Opening the casket will also help Surtur attack Asgard and destroy it, along with the rest of the universe. How does endless winter help a fire demon? Look, I'm not a Norse mythologist. Ask Walt Simonson the next time you see him at a convention. All we need to know is that it's bad. The Earth will soon be invaded by Surtur's demons, and Thor wants the Avengers to stand against them. Who's with him? Someone who's with him, well, I mean, not with him because he's flying towards the city, but with him in that he's willing to stand by his side until death, which cannot come quickly enough for him, is Hercules. However, Hercules' jet is soon overtaken by the Sons of Muspel, who fly past it on their way to attack the city. They descend on a frozen New York City, but they are met by Thor and the rest of the Avengers. Giant battle scene! While the Avengers battle valiantly on the streets of the city, the Vision has stayed behind to try and raise more reinforcements. However, the West Coast Avengers are already out helping deal with the strange weather conditions, as we saw in issue number 3 of their own title last week, and neither Alpha Flight, the Defenders, nor the X-Men are available either. But the Fantastic Four is available and conveniently located right in the city. Mr. Fantastic and the Vision chat, and as soon as the Vision explains the situation, the FF head out into the streets to kick some butt. By this time, Hercules has arrived in the jet he commandeered, and the pilot gets to eject the blustering blowhard, so Hercules can also join the battle. Meanwhile, in a hidden, secret, unknown lair somewhere super mysterious, Maelstrom awakens from his clone bank and is greeted by Deathurge. Maelstrom is unhappy with Deathurge's performance against the Avengers in the previous issue, since Deathurge didn't, you know, actually do anything. Deathurge is all, "Whatever, man, chill. I am, like, as mysterious as your headquarters, and I make vague pronouncements about the future, which could mean anything. Peace out." Maelstrom is not amused by Deathurge, but he can't worry about that now. Not when he has to move forward with his plan to gain ultimate power. Back to New York, where the Vision has joined the battle, as have the Warriors of Asgard led by the Warriors 3. Together, the combined heroes will push the villain back. To be continued in a non-Avengers comic. So our roll call this issue is Vision, Captain Marvel, Scarlet Witch, Wasp, Star Fox, and Thor. Our villains are Maelstrom and Deathurge, kind of. We see them, but obviously the real villains are these nameless, faceless Sons of Muspels running around. We don't ever get to see Maelstrom or Surtur in the, or Maelstrom, Malekith or Surtur in the title. And we also see Hercules, Hawkeye, Mr. Fantastic, the She-Hulk, the Human Torch, and Hogan the Grim. Not seen Hogan the Grim in this comic before.
We have not.
He first appeared in Journey into Mystery number 119. That was back in August of 1965. Hogan is one of the Warriors 3. Fandral
Are the other two in this? They just didn't speak?
They just don't speak. We see them in the background. Now, Fandral has had speaking role in the Avengers before. But really quick, the Warriors 3 are these three Asgardian warriors. Fandral is the dashing Errol Flynn-like sword wielder. Hogan is the quiet, grim...
Attila the Hun-looking mace guy.
Yeah, he likes to bash people with his mace, and Volstagg is the really fat one. Stan Lee described Hogan the Grim as like a Charles Bronson character. That's it. That's all I got for new characters. What do you got?
I wanted to point out before we start here that they covered this storyline in season 1, episode 20 of that Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon that we liked so much.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah.
But the, I really need to rewatch that.
The casket of, what is it? Casket of what winters?
Endless, ancient casket of endless winters.
Was opened by Loki in that. They didn't have, I think, or maybe Malekith was in it. Malekith was the bad guy in the second Thor movie as well.
Oh, that's right. Malekith was in Thor.
The Dark World.
Still Thorn. It's still Thor.
Thor Darker.
I did not remember what it was called at all. I don't remember a lot about that movie. I didn't dislike it as much as a lot of people, but I don't remember much about it.
It was pretty uneventful. Let's see.
Not like the new one coming out where Thor's got his nifty new haircut.
I have a problem with Thor just kind of swooping in here and saying, hey, this bad thing's going to happen. Everybody help me. You could have done a better job of explaining things. Like, why exactly does Surtur need to cross Earth to get to Asgard? Like, are we in the way? And in the way between where and Asgard, aren't the fire demons already on Asgard?
Well, no, because it's there.
They have their own planet?
Well, yeah, because it's the nine worlds. Do we need to... When we do our Thor podcast... no, but seriously, the Norse mythology, you had the nine worlds.
And everything has to go through Midgard, which is Earth. Is that because it's the middle?
I'm not sure if everything has to go through it. I don't really quite understand it all completely. But I will say that Surtur is not in Asgard. Surtur, I don't know what's going on with my... Surtur is not in Asgard. He is in Muspel, which is the fire demony area. Niflheim is where Ymir's at. That's the ice demony area.
That's the cold part.
There's other parts, too.
Yes. Gesundheit, I think, is one of them.
There's, I think, a Svartalfheim. I think that's where the dark elves may be. Maybe where Malekith is from.
Mm, right. And then he's like, hey... No mere mortals can help because, you know, fire demons, but you guys aren't mere mortals. How is Wasp not a mere mortal?
She shrinks and shoots bioblasts.
And she's easily distracted by a tree branch or a heavy door.
She's not distracted by a tree branch.
She's nearly killed.
She is beaten. Yeah, she is beaten within an inch of her life by a tree branch.
And then why do the demon hordes look more like futuristic Vikings?
Yeah, you would think if they're fire demons that they should be, I don't know, more fiery. Because they certainly are fire demons. We find out when the Human Torch comes in to help that he is basically useless because they just absorb his heat. So these are fire demons, but there's nothing about them that suggests fire.
They just look like guys.
They're not even really red. They're wearing armor, but their armor is kind of a purplish.
Yeah, this is definitely a Jack Kirby design that no one improvised on.
Yeah, they probably should have done something to make it a little bit more...
And then I'm curious why... So this demon horde swoops in on Earth. We're on our way. And they start attacking street signs and parked cars and... Seems like a waste of time.
Well, they don't seem to have a leader. Like, there's no one that seems to be there. We don't see any kind of Lieutenant Dan or any kind of, you know, authority figure with these demons are just swarming. And again, I say demons, but they just look like a bunch of guys in armor.
I know.
Are just swarming the city. So it's like a giant Warhammer 40K thing going on here.
And I get that there's a lot of them. But this is just, what, this is New York City, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are they doing this in every city on Earth?
No, I don't believe so.
So why is that?
Apparently New York is the Midgard of Midgard, where everyone has to go through New York.
I'm sorry, I'm taking this whole thing apart. It doesn't really make any sense.
No,
but if they really have to attack every city on Earth like this in order to get through, this is going to take a while.
Yeah, and I agree with you that it's... Sure, as a member of the team, Thor should just be able to come in and get help from the team. But it is weird because he hasn't been here for the last few issues, and spoiler alert, isn't here for the next one.
He just swoops in and says, hey, help me out with these weirdos.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to tell Thor no, but, you know, he could call or write sometimes and just say hi.
I have a note here that says Star Fox finds out once again that he is useless. I don't know what it references, but it's a pretty solid statement.
He tries to use his pleasure powers on the demons,
right.
And they have no pleasure centers. So apparently demons are never happy.
Surtur doesn't seem like a nice guy, though.
Oh, no, well, no. I can't imagine it's a lot of fun there. I mean, could you imagine if your leader was this giant orange creature that just, like, yelled out pronouncements and, you know, wanted to rule with an iron fist?
Yeah, it's got to be a little rough.
Yeah, I would think so.
So this whole issue is pretty much just a fight. We learned that Scarlet Witch's powers are still evolving, and now evidently her hex spheres give off shockwaves. That's new.
Yeah, Roger Stern, I really do like him, but I have not realized until this reread through how much he is responsible for destroying the Scarlet Witch.
He's the one that introduced the whole, hey, I'm just going to make them not be able to breathe anymore thing.
Yeah, yeah.
She does that a lot.
Yeah. Well, it's a great trick. I do it a lot too. Unfortunately, made it a little bit too powerful.
And then I get confused by Captain Marvel because she seems to be doing okay against these guys, but then she does this one move where she says she's releasing a quarter kiloton force blast. Aren't all of her powers light related?
No. She turns into different kinds of energy.
Okay.
Because she can turn into gamma energy or...
How do you release a quarter kiloton force blast amongst all your friends and none of them get hurt?
Well, there's none of them around her because, again, this is taking place throughout the entire city.
It's a quarter kiloton force blast.
I mean, it's possible that the Wasp is around, but no one really cares. No, I'm... Oh, actually, the Wasp is around.
She's right there. She's right next door.
Well, the Wasp is dead. Well, I'm sure that'll be handled in the next issue.
She just hit around the corner and that was enough?
She picked up a trash can lid, nailed it in front of her face.
I'm sorry. This fight's dumb.
We do get the interlude with Maelstrom and Deathurge.
Yeah, I guess at the end.
Which made me think Deathurge would be a great name for a punk rock or a death metal band.
Like one of those Norwegian, we only play music out in the woods.
Actually Googled it because I was sure there must be a Deathurge band out there, but I couldn't find one. D-E-T-H, probably.
Yeah.
Deathurge.
Yeah.
But I couldn't find one. So I think we should start one.
Okay.
Maybe our listeners, if we don't really have any musical abilities, but if any of our listeners do.
I don't think any of them do either when they...
I will...
Those death metal bands, I mean. All we have to do is scream a lot and pound on things. We'll be fine.
Oh, great. Wonderful. If anyone wants to be roadies, hit us up at avenginghour@gmail.com. I don't know what our email is.
Doesn't matter.
I don't have any other comments on this issue.
No, I'm having problems with this Avengers title because nothing seems to ever be happening that has anything to do with the Avengers.
Yeah, and we'll get to this a little bit more in the next episode where things with this title begins to seem to kick into more of a high gear. But this issue has always seemed very odd to me because let's do our other stuff and we'll get into it when we talk about our grades.
Okay.
Bullpen bulletins.
I didn't write down anything interesting.
The bullpen bulletins, Jim Shooter talks about what his job is as editor-in-chief, or as he'd like you to call him, chief fan representative.
Whatever.
It's always the job he wanted, to be chief fan representative.
But that pays horribly.
And then we have the letters page.
You've made this comment many times recently. These letters are boring. There's some people that don't seem to like the dire Wraiths. Agreed. Someone calls them out for giving Captain Marvel an afro, and someone else wants Iron Man and Wasp to get back together.
The one letter I picked out that I thought was somewhat interesting was Heisen Gearing of Chicago writes in basically saying that, and it's a good point that I think still happens sometimes, is when they're drawing people of color, they draw them like white people and then just color them a different color.
Usually gray.
Not so much as in the 60s, but yes. And, you know, his point is that
they should have some features.
Not different races look different. It's not just the color of their skin. They look different than other races. It'd be nice to draw them that way instead of as white people with different colored skin.
It's funny. I wonder if there's like a weird problem with artists where they're like, well, I don't want to do that because then it'll look like I'm stereotyping something.
Sure. I think you could make that argument that some artists were afraid. But I think more likely it's just as a bunch of white artists and they're like, I know how to draw people because right. All people are white.
I'll just look in the mirror.
He also makes the good point that not all black people wear afros as hair in 1984.
He makes that point, but who else in the Marvel Universe has an afro?
Well, that's also a good point. I mean, the problem, I think, is that when you have so few characters of a certain ethnicity, they take the weight of the entire ethnicity on their shoulders.
Right.
That used to happen a lot with gay characters. You couldn't have...
Gay characters had afros?
You had to be careful about how you portrayed a gay character because the gay community would get... As a member of the gay community, I wouldn't get really upset, but people get really upset about it because they'd be like, oh, you can't make your gay character this or that or the other thing because
we're just like everybody else.
Yes, because that's you've only got one gay character, so right.
all of you are representing it all right there.
Yeah, and I think it's the same thing because, you know, we've got
Captain Marvel and Misty Knight are the only two I can think of that have afros.
Yeah, well, and I'm trying to think of another black character. I mean, obviously Black Panther doesn't. Luke Cage did, though, for a while, didn't he?
Yeah, he had kind of a small one.
Yeah,
so did Brother Voodoo.
I mean, they do a lot of... But the problem is, I mean, you mentioned Brother Voodoo. These are not big-name characters in the Marvel Universe. No. There just aren't that many people of color in the Marvel Universe, especially in 1985. I guess you're Sam Wilson. I don't know if he had an afro or not.
He just kind of seems short. Robbie Robertson always just had kind of...
Yes, he had short hair.
Older guy haircut.
I would love, personally, what I would have hoped would have happened would be like issue 251, every member of the team had an afro.
I want him to show like awesome. The black characters with like some bad like dad haircut. Like when on SNL, when Eddie Murphy dressed up as a white guy and he had like that hair where it's like parted on the side and like comb like feathered over. And I want to see a black character that has that hairdo. Like they just come out of a white person's hair salon.
Anyway.
Way off the rails there.
But that's unfortunately the only letter here that they're encouraged. encourage people to write to the Avengers with their Secret Wars, their comments on the Secret Wars Limited series, which suggests to me that people aren't writing about the Secret Wars Limited series, or that no one's writing into the Avengers about anything.
Or they didn't know where to write their letters. Were there, I guess there weren't letters pages in the Secret Wars issues.
No. I guess the Avengers is a good place for it. I mean, they were there.
Like half of the team. Although I don't think any of those people are on the team now.
But so, Captain Marvel is. So were the FF, and so were the X-Men, and so was Spider-Man, and they're not telling you to write your letters. So was the Incredible Hulk, they're not telling you to write your letters there. So it seemed odd to me.
Maybe it's because they weren't sure if they were going to add Cyclops and Puck to the West Coast Avengers.
So we talked a little bit, very little bit, about Mark Gruenwald's assistant editor, Mike Carlin, especially during Assistant Editor Month. And they had been doing some weird stuff in the letters pages where he left the book, and they were doing some weird thing about his replacement, and it was a big mystery who his replacement was. Like, did anyone care who the assistant editors were?
I forgot what you were even talking about.
So this issue, they make this huge deal about introducing the new assistant editor, who is Howard Mackey, one of the worst writers of comic books.
Wow.
Ever. He will leave editing in the 90s when anyone could get a job writing comic books.
Howard Mackey's in the Chuck Austin Hall of Fame.
Yeah, go ahead and read. He wrote some Amazing Spider-Man for a while, which some of that's readable. But he did it was right after X-Factor. It was Havoc in an Alternate Reality. They put Havoc in an Alternate Reality where Storm's a vampire, and it was bad. It was really, really, really bad. My point is, who the hell cares who the assistant editor is? Why are they spending this much time on Howard Mackey? They have his name on bigger font. It's almost as big as the letters page name.
I like Mark Gruenwald and all, but I don't really even care who the editor is.
Yeah, I would agree with both his statements. I like Mark Gruenwald. But generally, the editor of your comic book should pretty much be invisible.
I was just going to say that if they're a good editor, you shouldn't know who they are.
Yeah. Alrighty, Roo, who's your MVP?
I gave it to Thor because it's his reason that we're here.
I give it to Captain Marvel, who seems the best suited of the current team to fight this kind of a fight. Useless character?
Either Wasp or Star Fox, but probably Wasp.
I think either one of those is acceptable. Did you have a best quote taken out of context?
I did not.
I couldn't find one.
I went through that thing like three times.
And Avengers level threat.
Probably on numbers alone.
I think so. There's just, as you say, there's just so many of them. And they do seem tough.
I mean, obviously they got some help from the Fantastic Four.
And final grade.
I give it a C. It's a Thor story right after we did a Spider-Woman story and an Eternals story. And it's just kind of there.
I give it a B-, but I don't disagree with anything you said. It is a Thor story. It doesn't belong in this title. And more importantly, it is completely superfluous. This story does one thing that matters. It brings Hercules back to the team.
That doesn't matter.
Well, not to me. But it brings Hercules back. We'll now have Hercules, God help us, hanging around for the next, I don't know, 20, 30 issues.
He's got nothing else to do.
That's it. That is the only thing. Otherwise, this story is a part of the Thor storyline. And more importantly, this doesn't need to happen.
Do you think they were sitting around going, how can we get Hercules back on the team? And then they're like, you know what we're doing in Thor? What if that just spilled over because Thor has a connection to the Avengers and we can just dump Hercules in there?
I really don't know. I don't know why this story got greenlit. I really don't understand it. And what's even more frustrating is they set this up, but this doesn't conclude here. We will never mention this plot again. So let me tell you what happened. It took another three more issues of Thor,
of just like punching demons.
No, Thor leaves in the middle of this issue because you'll notice at the end Thor's gone. He's disappeared. He came, he got the Avengers help, he fights in the beginning of the issue, but by the end of the issue he is gone.
Did we see him leave?
Nope.
Wow.
He went to do some solo stuff. Here's what we need to know. In issue 351 of his title, the armed forces come to New York to help the Avengers and their allies continue the fight against these fire demons. And that battle basically goes on until 353, with you just seeing bits and pieces of it in Thor's title, while Thor is off doing solo stuff, until finally, the last issue, which is super cool, Odin, Thor, and Loki team up to fight Surtur. And Surtur and Odin both apparently die when they fall into a crevice together.
So it's like Gandalf and the Balrog.
Something like that. The best part of that is there. So you've got this wonderful picture with Odin in the front and Thor and Loki fanning out to his sides, and they're all yelling a battle cry. And Odin's like, "For Asgard!" And Thor's like, "For the realm eternal!" And Loki's like, "For myself!" I love Loki. Walt Simonson's Loki was always great. All right, that's it.
Okay.
Moving on along.
Let's move on to something that has something to do with the team. Issue 250. Ooh. December 1984. Roger Stern and Al Milgram again. This one's called World Power. It says it's a special double-sized issue, though it's not clear if they're celebrating the 250th issue or they just need extra space to fit in all the awesome. But I digress. Apparently, last issue was just a distraction that needed to be jammed into our timeline, because this issue appears to pick up where 248 left off, with Maelstrom being reborn into a new clone body. The splash page shows our new Maelstrom hatching updated clones of his minions, who we will unfortunately have to be introduced to. Helio is the dumb one, Phobius is the creepy one, Gronk is the fat one. If they were a boy band, they'd be called Three Strikes. There's a plan being hatched here, but we won't find out what it is until later. Let's fast forward 1 week instead and head over to the mansion, where Vision is still examining the crusty old husk of Maelstrom's last body. He's robotically stroking his chin and calculating coincidence factors between Maelstrom and the Arnim Zola clones from the last annual. I guess all clones die the same way in the Marvel Universe, but Vision hasn't quite formulated that conclusion when either a sensor goes off on his bat belt or his appendix suddenly burst. There's someone outside his electronics lab and they must be stopped. Vision ghosts down through the levels and finds Hercules pounding on the door with a giant crate hoisted on his shoulder. It's an electronics delivery that Vision snatches from the Olympian idiot before shushing him away. Hercules takes the hint and heads to the pool area to see what the others are up to. Wanda and Jan are timing Star Fox as he holds his breath underwater. The Titan bursts from the surface, gasping for air, and soaks the bikini-clad women. There's some flirting, which probably leads to an awkward orgy, but we don't get to see any of that because we're whisked away to the Bern Institute of Science way up in the Swiss Alps. For some reason, Captain Marvel has zipped over to meet with a mustached professor named André Leclerc, who tells her that the Earth's rotation is slowing down. If it's not restored soon, there could be earthquakes, tidal waves, hurricanes, a planet that's half ice and half fire. We could see dogs laying with cats, sky gods dancing on the dream clouds, great rivers of wasted emotion and mountains of unmet expectations swirling and jutting into the welcoming hips of Mother Nature herself. It's the end of the world as we know it!
I feel fine.
I know. Look, I don't have any idea who this professor is or how Captain Marvel knows him or how he knows that she's an Avenger or why Captain Marvel is even there talking to him. None of this is explained. At all. But it all sounds quite dire. Meanwhile, some 3,000 miles away at the Avengers' new Palos Verdes compound, Wonder Man and Tigra watch Hawkeye shoot arrows at his wife on a tennis court. There's an ill-timed earthquake. Mockingbird is almost skewered. And this provides an opportunity for Vision to invite the West Coast team to help in the upcoming battle, just as soon as they figure out who and where they're battling. Problem solved when Captain Marvel returns from her scouting mission. She's discovered a giant complex on Cape Horn at the tip of South America. Unfortunately, when she checked it out, she ran into Phobius, who gave her the evil eye, and now she's scared of everything. Tigra pops onto the video monitor and assures her that she can be scared and useless and still get paid to be an Avenger. Isn't life great? They strap Captain Marvel into a Quinjet, and both teams take off for adventure. We get a peek into each member's psyche as the plot moves forward in thought bubbles. Most of them are worried. Mockingbird wonders what an acrobatic ex-spy can do against a guy who can slow down planets. But Hercules just sits there with a dumb smirk, probably getting all excited over the thought of wrestling the bad guy. As the two ships approach the base, Helio appears and blows them off course with a laugh. Star Fox and Iron Man fly out to face him. The minion puts up a good fight, trapping Star Fox in a whirlwind and knocking out Iron Man's boot jets. But then Star Fox uses his secret power, and the goofy hippie starts laughing and helping our two teams. Helio leads them to the hidden lair's entrance, but is met by Phobius, who zaps him with his eyeball powers, snapping him out of his happy place. And then the sad little fight starts. Tigra takes out Phobius with a Vulcan death pinch. Wonder Man concusses Helio with a finger to the temple, and Hercules is pounding on Gronk while simultaneously stuck to him. The others rush into the base to find Maelstrom, but he finds them first, and he is not impressed. From the power he's already siphoned off the planet, Maelstrom is easily 50 feet tall. He grabs Hercules and Wonder Man in one hand, with Star Fox in the other. Captain Marvel cowers at his feet. Iron Man and Vision are blasted out to the surface, and the rest of the team members, all the weak ones, look pathetic trying to hurt Maelstrom. Tigra's clawing at his kneecap like a kitten looking for a place to curl up. Mockingbird is playing knick-knack with her sticks on his ankle. Wasp's stings are doing no effect, and Hawkeye's arrows look like tiny fireworks. Maelstrom takes the Avengers in his hands and plops them down atop some sort of generator, calling them an amusing kinetic battery. Then he takes Tigra's head between two fingers and begins to squeeze. Sensing her near death, Captain Marvel snaps out of her funk and attacks. She bounces around, destroying equipment left and right until she's finally repelled by this battery thing. That somehow gives everyone an idea. Let's overload this battery and see what happens. I mean, it's siphoning all the kinetic energy from the Earth itself, so let's mess with it. Should be totally safe. I'll spare you the boring pages of fight scenes and explain that by overloading this energy governor, they're able to make Maelstrom's body expand at a quicker rate without allowing his mass to catch up. Soon, he's bigger than the Earth itself, and his physical form dissipates throughout the entire universe, blah blah blah. After all of that, Maelstrom's minions rush back to the resurrection room to discover that their last set of clones has been destroyed. They surrender to the Avengers, but we have no idea what happens after that, because now we're back at the West Coast compound for a celebratory barbecue. Why do they keep doing these things?
Hawkeye loves a good barbecue.
There's some small talk. Hercules likes the new digs. Tigra thinks Star Fox is hot. Wasp is creeped out by Star Fox's powers. Vision wonders who else is creeped out. And Star Fox wanders over to Captain Marvel to drink and watch the sunset and probably get it on. The end. Our roll call. Well, this is a big one because we have both teams. Our East Coast lineup appears to be Vision, Scarlet Witch, Wasp, Captain Marvel, Star Fox, and Hercules. Our West Coast Avengers are Hawkeye, Mockingbird, Wonder Man, Iron Man, and Tigra. Our villains are Maelstrom and his minions, Helio, Phobius, and Gronk. Great. Helios, Phobius, and Gronk all appeared for the first time in Marvel 2-in-1 number 71 with Maelstrom. Gronk is Maelstrom's bodyguard and the muscle of the group. He is tough and sticky. I don't know why.
So gross.
Phobius is an interrogator and uses some sort of mind control powers. And,
to make people afraid. And he causes fear.
And Helio is a stupid hippie who can fly and generate wind. All three of these losers are clones, constantly being recreated but retaining the memories of their past lives, which is kind of a twisted addition there. And that's it. There's nothing else new here.
All right. So a couple of things we should talk about. The Vision is in the Avengers pathology labs at the beginning of this issue, looking at the Maelstrom's corpse. The Avengers have pathology labs? How often do the Avengers need a pathology lab?
How often are they dragging dead bodies back?
I'm a little worried about what the Avengers are doing that we're not seeing.
And why do they need labs? Why is it plural?
Well, okay. Oh, it is plural. I thought I just said that, but no, it is plural. So there are many places they can look for dead bodies or examine dead bodies. Yeah, it kind of worries me.
It's a little strange.
And
plus it says in the caption that it's a week later. So I'm assuming that Maelstrom's been dead for at least 10 days, maybe 2 weeks, and Vision's still examining him.
Well, and then here's my other question, and this leads into my next point. Who would use the pathology labs? Because I don't want to keep harping on this, but the Avengers have only ever had one actual doctor in their ranks, and that was Don Blake, RIP.
Well, I mean, Pym at least was a biologist.
Yeah, well, biochemist usually is how he's referred to, but yeah. We'll give him a pass.
I wonder if this is the same lab that Pym was in, or no, that Vision was in when Ant-Man went inside him. And wait, was that Pym Ant-Man or was that Lang Ant-Man?
No, that was Pym Ant-Man. But this leads to my next point, which is that Vision's talking about his experiments, and Hercules can't go in that room because experiments. The Vision is not a scientist. Mm-hmm. He's never been a scientist, and I get a little frustrated with the idea that anyone with an IQ over 120 in the Marvel Universe is able to create incredible devices to amaze the senses and...
Well, to be fair, he is a robot. He must understand his own electronics. Plus, he's hooked up with Isaac now. So he's got, you know...
That is true.
Intelligence of, like, the universe.
All right. But it does annoy me a little bit that the Vision is apparently a forensic scientist. Yeah. Plus a Tony Stark-level tinkerer.
Yeah, it's a bit much. But I guess someone has to fill that role.
And as you mentioned, Hercules, we now find his member of the team. You can imagine how excited I am.
Mm-hmm. You got a lot to look forward to.
You weren't sure about Professor LeClaire way back when I talked about... See, if you'd have read Amazing Spider-Man Annual number whatever, you'd remember Professor LeClaire. He was the person who convinced Captain Marvel to go out to the oil rig to help him get back the doohickey gadget he created, and that's what turned her into Captain Marvel. So he was there for her origin. What's annoying to me about this subplot is...
People reading the Avengers comic wouldn't know...
Well, obviously the people that read the Avengers comic would have read the Amazing Spider-Man Annual where she first appeared.
We live in the Avengers universe, not the Amazing Spider-Man universe. We have no idea who Professor LeClaire is.
No, it probably would have been a good idea to give a general reminder of who Professor LeClaire is.
Or even like for her to say something and then do the little asterisk and it's like, see Amazing Spider-Man Annual one.
Because it's been... Even if you read the book, the annual she first appeared in, it's been 2 years now?
Yeah.
So it's been a little while, and he was only in the one issue. But what really frustrates me about all this is the fact that Professor LeClaire knows her and likes her quite a bit. He's the one that basically, helped push her into a superhero career. It would have made so much more sense if he would have called her and asked her to come because he wanted to show her something, rather than, as usual, the amazing coincidence that Captain Marvel shows up just when he has something, a threat to Earth, that he can tell her about. I mean, come on, really?
Doesn't she say that somebody called her there? No, showed up for the heck of it?
She said,
"What's that?
I got your letter about your appointment here, and I wanted to offer my congratulations in person."
Oh, so she found out that he got a job or something.
Yeah, she found out he got a job there, and she wanted to say...
some free time.
So and she wanted to say congrats. And, you know, hey, that I can see that. I mean, she can fly so fast. Why wouldn't she be able to do that? But what frustrates me is it's unnecessary. It's just one more coincidence in comics, and I feel like comics, it's one of the tropes of this comic that I really don't like. It's lazy. And like so many things that Roy Thomas used to do that we'd be like, why would you do that coincidence? The frustrating thing about this is you change two lines of dialogue and all of a sudden the coincidence is gone and it makes more sense.
Right.
I thought it was nice when Captain Marvel is is affected by Phobius, that they use Tigra's experiences with Ghost Rider as a way to make Tigra useful. Like, she's been through this.
She's useful by being useless.
Yeah, she's basically like, I know what it's like to be a loser.
You're fine. I'm useless, too. It's great.
Yeah, they let me on the team twice.
Don't worry about it.
You should have read my limited series. I did nothing.
You're fine. You're a girl. They need, it's like quotas.
I found it interesting after they made a big deal in the West Coast Avengers. Well, it wasn't a big deal, but after they mentioned the West Coast Avengers, that the West Coast Avengers is a completely autonomous team. The Hawkeye's basically like, I have to defer to the Vision. And I thought, really? Do you have to?
I guess when they get together, he's the overall chairman.
I didn't think that's how it was supposed to work, but I think
they're autonomous as long as they remain autonomous.
I think we'll see this throughout the history of the West Coast Avengers, is that every time the two teams get together, it's just assumed that the East Coast team is the more is the team with authority.
They're the established team. Yeah.
They have authority in that. You mentioned it, but I want to mention as well the panel where they're all fighting Maelstrom and Mockingbird is just smacking his toes with her metal staff made me so happy. I absolutely love it. I guess not his toes, it is his ankle, but it's just great.
He's playing the drums.
You mentioned about how they overloaded him. So I want to see if you can explain to me if I've got this right.
Sure.
So they increased the power of the machine he was using to siphon off the rotational energy of the Earth, and they increased that so he would absorb too much power too quickly.
I'm not exactly sure, because you would think that if they messed with the battery and it was absorbing power quicker, that it would ruin the Earth quicker.
You'd think.
But I'm wondering if it had something to do with their powers, and but then that would make them weak if he was absorbing their powers.
Well, and that's what I thought. I thought, well, maybe they did something else. But no matter where I could look, I couldn't find them, because, I mean, of course, the Scarlet Witch hexes the machine.
Of course. Well, maybe that's what it was then. She just hexed it, and it just did something unexpected.
And he immediately grows bigger, and it may only take a few minutes, but still, if you're exponentially increasing the amount of energy it's drawing from the Earth's core, it just seems like a bad plan, is all I'm saying.
And where does all that energy go then?
Well, that's the other thing. Does he keep it when he discorporates? It's really odd.
Such a maelstrom.
He'll be
bad writing.
We won't see him again for, I don't know if we ever see him again in the Avengers, and he won't be seen for a long time till Mark Gruenwald brings him back in Quasar.
Is he going to will himself back together?
He kind of is almost like a cosmic trope. Entity for a while. It's almost like Kronos. Anyway, and I wanted to say, I really actually like the Star Fox Captain Marvel scene at the end of the issue where they finally put a bow on the subplot that's been going on since Star Fox arrived in the book.
What, because she was the only one he hadn't slept with yet?
Because he wasn't sure if he was a little unsure of her calling herself Captain Marvel, but I thought it was done well.
Oh, I forgot all about that.
And we have no bullpen bulletins or letters pages issue. So, MVP?
I guess you got to go with Captain Marvel overall. I mean, she was scared for part of it, but she's pretty much the one that said, hey, this is what's going on. This is what we need to go look at.
I gave it to Star Fox because he's the one that comes up with a plan to beat Maelstrom. And he never gets to be the MVP, so I gave it to him. Who's your useless character?
Mockingbird or Tigra or Wasp?
I give it to Mockingbird. It's not her fault, but this is really not her kind of fight.
Hey, she knew going into
it. Oh, yeah. Well, that's one of the things I like about Mockingbird. She seems to generally be very much aware of the fact when she's outclassed, and she's okay with that.
Yeah.
Do you have a best quote taken out of context?
I'm not too heavy for you, am I?
I did not even see that. Avengers level threat?
Possibly.
I think so. Maelstrom pretty thready in this issue.
Yeah, I mean, they beat him by like a stupid, oops, hey, look, we did that. Yeah. I mean, actually beat you like hand to hand.
Well, here's how I thought it through.
Like when they got Graviton drunk in the West Coast Avengers.
Here's how I thought it through. I thought, okay, is Maelstrom a threat normally? Almost. What if you add Gronk? Definitely.
Oh, boom.
Tips him right over the edge.
Took Hercules right out of the fight.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Which is kind of good. My MVP is Gronk. The problem with Maelstrom is you don't know from appearance to appearance like what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
Like this issue, apparently he was trying to grow big. I don't know what he was trying to do. He was trying to suck all the power out of that Unimind brain thing. Like, to what end?
Well,
was that going to make him big too? Is that his thing? He just wants to be big?
He's like Tom Hanks. My understanding is that with the Unimind, he was trying to absorb his energy, not because he wanted the energy to grow big or whatever, but because he wanted the knowledge that the Unimind had. Because he says that that's when he came up with this plan, is when he was in contact with the Unimind.
No.
Now, why the Unimind was thinking...
What were they thinking? What if we could stop the Earth?
Yeah. I don't know why they
were thinking... Could we live here
then? It seems odd that would have been in the Unimind's mind. But that's what he says. This issue, his plan was to absorb all the power from the Earth. And by the time he did that, he would have been so powerful, he then could have gone out into the universe...
Just stepped over to the next planet.
And done I don't know what.
Yeah, what? I think somebody brought that up too. Like, why are you, what is the point of this? Like, what are you going to do after you have all of that?
when Mark Gruenwald brings him back, he basically is like, you know what? He's just a nihilist. Let's not try and put too much into him, into his motivations.
Probably a good thing.
Alrighty, Roo. That's it. That's all we got.
What's your final grade?
Oh, did we not do that? I give it a B.
So did I. Huh.
It's solid work from Roger Stern.
It's nice to see the two teams work together.
Yeah.
Not the most interesting threat, and those minions are kind of stupid, but...
But it's solid. Interestingly enough, I believe we've been saying for so long that the Roger Stern and Al Milgrom duo was almost getting a little boring. I believe this is the end of them.
Yeah, I think so.
Because Al Milgrom will very shortly be going over to work on West Coast Avengers, and the next few issues, at least, are different artists.
Yeah, don't we get the West Coast Avengers artist to come over?
We get Bob Hall to come over. So it's interesting that we may have seen the end of this, but these two had a run of at least 20 issues, I'd say.
At least.
So it seems like they've been on the book forever.
20 years, right? About 20 years.
Right, sure.
Seems like it. On our next episode, we finally find out Vision's big plan, which seems to involve a very crowded dream sequence and his house being burned down. Meanwhile, Wasp leaves the team to go on vacation with Paladin and Baron Brimstone, whoever they are. The Blood Brothers punch Hercules out of his clothes, and Dane Whitman returns just in time to watch the Vision go cuckoo. Got a lot. That's a lot in there.
We don't even need to do a recap next issue.
I am done. As always, thanks for listening, everyone. If you want to get in touch with us, our email address is mail@avenginghour.com. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram @AvengingHour. We have a Facebook page, and our webpage is avenginghour.com.
Sure is.
That's all. Thanks, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.